The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Rolling on here on the Chuck Oliver Show. Heath Klein in for Chuck today. King will be back in the big chair coming up tomorrow, but with one day away, enjoy a little extra time after the weekend. We take care of business for you with the college football talk regardless. And again, we had five spring games wrapping up everybody in the SEC spring over the weekend. We already checked in College Station. Now we head to Columbia to find out how things went down with the Gamecocks. And David Cloninger, who covers them for the Charleston Post and Courier, joins us now here on the program on the Duncan Newsmaker line. He is our Truist reporter today for the Gamecocks. David, how are you?
Not bad, Heath. How you doing?
Great, man. I appreciate you making the time. Let's start with just the event itself. Some programs try to just kind of get this done and don't make a big production of it. Will Muschamp, back when he was at South Carolina, was kind of the definition of that. It was treated almost like an annoyance, an obligation, rather than a chance to show off a little bit. Beamer has moved this thing into prime time, and it's pretty clear they want it to be a recruiting event, a fan-motivating event. So overall, how'd it go?
Not bad in terms of that, Heath. You know, they said it very clearly beforehand. Don't expect too much from the actual game. It's going to be kept vanilla because there's just no sense showing off everything you want to do in the fall in what's basically just a meaningless scrimmage for the spring. But in terms of the pomp and circumstance, the pageantry, it was great. You know, a bunch of recruits were in. They coincided it with a big athletic weekend around USC. They had the fireworks show afterwards. So from that standpoint, you know, A+. And of course, being on primetime under the lights at USC where they can show all the videos and everything, that never hurts.
So if there was nothing new debuting with regards to coordinators or head coach, which is exactly the opposite of what we talked about with College Station just 30 minutes ago, the thing that everybody's eyes were on was Lenoris Sellers. Now, Sellers played some last year, and he played in this game last year, but this was the first time that people got a look at him as the unquestioned guy who is supposed to be the future of the program at the quarterback spot, even though he's not officially been named the quarterback. As of now, that'll be the starter. So how did that go?
Well, he looked really good, Heath. And obviously, you want to take everything in the spring game with a grain of salt, because if he does well, does that mean the defense was terrible? But the main thing is that he showed good awareness, good decision-making in the pocket. It wasn't just, I'm going to take off and run at the first sign of trouble. You did see it where you know he can run. You know that threat is there. But it was also going to be, you have to try to make sure you can let the play develop. And if it doesn't come together as quickly as maybe you would like, you can still burn a second or two before you try to make something happen. So in that vein, Heath, he did very well. On the first drive, he completed every pass he threw. He was 4 for 4. He also ran three times for, I think it was 27 yards or maybe it was 37, and he took in the touchdown on a 13-yard scamper around left end when you could tell he was looking for his tight end to open up on the right side, and he got blocked off the play. So that's a good thing. Nothing against Spencer Rattler, who played fantastically well the past 2 years, but where Spencer would hang in there and try to let the play develop, try to make it happen, and then maybe take off running for a 4-yard gain, Sellers showed a bit more quicker decision-making and could turn that into a 10-yard gain. So, again, spring game, he's still only thrown 4 passes in varsity competition. There's a long way to go, but they haven't formally declared a starting quarterback at South Carolina, Heath, but everybody knows what the deal is.
Yeah,
everybody knows Sellers is going to be the guy.
Yeah, and that's been the case since last year. Again, just when you see him, and most people listening to us have not yet seen him, we don't have any idea how he will do in game situations, reading defenses, making good choices when pressure is on. We don't know that. But you will not see him and wonder, does he have the resources? It's going to be that next step of does he have the ability to put it together in a game situation? He clearly has the physical tools to be a special player if he has that, and he has to show that, obviously, in the game. I was a little surprised, David, that Robbie Ashford, for a guy who obviously has game experience but is in his first semester with that program, that they didn't have him do a little bit more. I just would think just to get him a few reps with some of the guys, they would have let him throw a little bit more than they did.
Absolutely, Heath. And I know that they did want to keep it vanilla. They didn't want to show off too much. They hardly even threw downfield. But considering that you want him to stay around, and pretty much Devil's Advocate is saying they're not naming the Lenoris the official starter because they know that the portal window is open and they need an experienced guy to be in here just in case something happens during the fall. But they didn't really let Robbie reach into his bag of tricks and show what he could do. Now, he does have some speed in the pocket, got to show that off a little, but, you know, didn't really get to show off the arm a whole lot. Did well, but just didn't have a whole lot of big sample size to get in there. Then again, maybe they thought, hey, this guy's shown everything we know that he could do because he started a lot for Auburn a year or two ago. So maybe that played into it. But I was a little surprised as well, thinking like, you know, this guy's only going to play a half. Let him cut it loose a little bit because you know that he's probably going to have to play some in the fall for whatever circumstance.
Yeah, that's the thing I thought was interesting is it's one thing if, you know, maybe you had a guy like Lenoris Sellers that is on the way up and you kind of want to keep the lid on him and not have somebody get interested and start sniffing around about whether or not they could coax him to leave. But it feels like people know what Robbie Ashford is or isn't as a quarterback already. You're not really hiding him when he's already played at Auburn. So I just thought it was an interesting choice for them to do that. Regardless, for the fall, if Ashford would obviously be the backup, would there be a scenario that maybe he gets some series because he is known as a runner? If they're trying to keep a guy like Sellers from taking hits, is there a chance maybe he's been told, look, we're going to have some packages for you, ways to get you into the game to try and minimize the number of shots a guy like Sellers, who's expected to be such an important part of things, takes?
I would have to think so, Heath, just because they know that running is going to be a big part of Lenoris Sellers' game. And you're going to take some wear and tear, especially if you take off quickly and run. You know, guys are going to be keying on you, and you're going to take some bumps and bruises. So anything you can do to save him and try to get him through the majority of 12 games, you're going to have to do it. You know, last year, Spencer Rattler pretty much had to stay in because they knew it was like, you got no running game. And you have to have this guy just to try to generate some points, you know. But and he played not through anything significant, but he played through some bumps last year, especially toward the end of the season. So I think that's a very real possibility to say you're going to have these Robbie Ashford and to be ready because you're going to have to try to save Lenoris and try to minimize the damage he's going to do strictly because he does bring that to the table as you got to watch out for this guy because he can't take off running at the drop of a hat and he can't hurt you on that. So it would be a smart thing to do, a proactive thing to do. And I think Dowell Loggins, especially how handicapped he was last year in terms of not having a running game, he's going to do everything possible to make sure that he has a double threat under center for the majority of the season.
So we're certainly not going to go off of one game with limited access to begin with to try and judge this. Last year you saw an unbelievable level of chemistry between Spencer Rattler and Xavier Leggett. They're both obviously on their way on to the pros. Is there anybody in practice, scrimmages, whatever, where it seems like maybe among the receiver core there's some extra chemistry between Sellers and anybody yet?
Oh, sure. A couple of guys who came in from the transfer portal, Jared Brown from Coastal and Gage Larvadane, those guys have already seemed to be kind of working their way and saying, hey, they're catching Lenoris Sellers' eyes when they go out on the flat. Elijah Caldwell, a freshman who was set to play a lot last year, and then he got a shoulder injury in the next to last week of camp that kind of limited him. He's a guy that's even drawing praises from the other receivers as a guy that can really stand out. So those are two names. Mazio Bennett, freshman out of Greenville, he's a guy that really came on late and had a big catch in the spring game. He's another one as well. But that's good to see. But also, everybody knows USC's in the portal right now, scouring it as hard as they can, trying to find a couple more receivers simply because the guys they have, they're good, but they're all short and they're all quick. They don't really have a tall, stretch-the-field, go-up-and-get-it kind of receiver. Maybe that played into why he didn't throw downfield too much on Saturday. But they needed to have some chemistry because those guys are going to play, but they also need to go find a couple more post-haste.
Dave Klinger with us here from the Charleston Post and Courier, covers the Gamecocks, looking at South Carolina coming out of their spring game on Saturday night. Of course, the guy that somebody listening is saying, well, wait a minute, what about the Nick Harbor guy? I thought he was supposed to be that guy. Again, he did not play in the spring game, was not really a participant for, I guess, almost any of spring because of his track obligations. From the beginning, David, the talk has been that he's trying to make the Olympic team, and then maybe if he does or he doesn't, then things go from there. So what is the timetable for him now with the Olympics and then whatever after that then he does with regards to football?
Yeah, you're right. He was around the program a lot during the spring, but actually practicing and participating, he was not. He was, practicing track, running track. He had an all-day competition where he ran the 100 and 200 on Saturday. Apparently, he really wanted to come over there and suit up and play. And Shane Beamer said, absolutely not. Not going to do that. So in terms of the Olympics, even Nick would say that it's probably a long shot that he makes the team. There just hasn't been enough time to fully prep for that when he played football all fall. Yet his time in the 200 was right on the cusp of what gets you invited to the Olympic trials. So if that keeps up, he can get invited to the trials, and who knows, from there, maybe he makes the team, maybe he doesn't, maybe he makes it as an alternate, but either way, you have to start preparing for going to Paris for the 2024 Olympics. So I believe the trials are mid-July, if I'm not mistaken. And if he does make the team, if even as an alternate, it's one of those saying that, okay, well, you're probably not going to be back, best case, until halfway through preseason practice is over. And you're looking at there from saying, you know, if you'll be ready for the first game, who knows, who doesn't know. But it's all very fluid right now. But in terms of a potential calendar, that's what you're looking at. You kind of start at the Olympic trials out in Eugene, Oregon this summer and say, if he goes there, that's when you kind of start to think, all right, what's going to happen in terms of the football season?
So you already said they're going to get into the portal. I'm sure there's going to be some kids once they've had their meetings with Beamer here in the next couple of days that say, okay, realistically, it's time for me to get moving and go somewhere else. Numbers wise, how much can they do in the portal? Your best guess, knowing what we know right now.
Well, as the phrase always says, Heath, you know, the numbers always work out. So I'm actually not familiar with exactly the number of scholarships that they have now, but they're close to the end or close to the 85. So they know that they need to get at least two receivers. And they would also like to get some offensive linemen just to build up depth. They like the kind of group of 10 to 12 that they have right now, but they can always use more, as evidenced from last year when over half of the offensive linemen they had were hurt at some point in the year. So they're right there. There will be a couple of guys that decide to leave and move on into the transfer portal. Those meetings start on Wednesday morning and will continue through the next couple of days. So once the smoke clears, they expect to be at their 85 or very close to it because, of course, anything could happen for the summer. But right now, a rough number I would think would be 4 to 5 guys because they also know at this point there's some unnamed guys that won't be coming back.
David Kloninger, you can check him out on Twitter. DCPNC is the handle, and of course, his work in the Charleston Post and Courier. David, appreciate it, man.
No problem. He's good talking with you.
There you go. There's the lowdown from South Carolina as, again, they wrapped up their spring, and so going to be sorting through a few things over the next few days. And you know, you never know what might happen with the portal. Obviously, they can kind of see who's in and who's not. It's been interesting, though. So far, we haven't seen the mass entrance to the portal that I think some people thought we would. We've seen plenty of guys go in, but we haven't seen nearly as much of a mass exodus as I think some people believe that just half the program would be jumping in at some places. It doesn't look like that yet. And so what you're saying in these meetings might in part be based on what you've seen so far in the portal. You, unlike some of the programs that wrapped up before, you have a little bit of knowledge of, okay, what looks like it's happening there? What are the trends? And so maybe there's some kids that you're thinking, well, we might be more interested in keeping them around than we thought. There might not be as much available in the portal. Now, again, you've still got more than a week for kids to put their name in, and some of the kids that haven't put their name in probably didn't because they hadn't wrapped up their spring until this past weekend. But it hasn't been quite as wild as I think some people would imagine. So we'll see how many kids wind up for their purposes or South Carolina's purposes and some of these other schools that just wrapped up hitting the portal over the next few days. We're seeing some kids waited a while, too. Like Clemson wrapped up 2 weeks ago, and there's two Clemson kids in the last 24 hours that have gotten into the portal. So that's kind of interesting to me that they clearly weren't ready to go right when the portal started to say, let me jump in. It took some time, and then they decided, okay, it's probably a right thing to do. So how's this going to go? Are we going to see a bunch of kids wait longer than expected to get in? Maybe that's what's happening here, too. We're all kind of working through it together because we haven't ever seen a portal with no restrictions of any kind like we're dealing with right now. It is the Chuck Oliver Show. We will check in on Alabama coming up in 15 minutes as College Football Talk continues year round. Keep it right here.
Now back to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
Chuck Oliver Show rolls on here on a Monday. Heath in for Chuck today. Thank you for hanging out with us. We always appreciate it. And look, there's a lot of debates. These are some of the debates that carry people through when we get to summer, especially. There's always the arguments about what conference is better, whose history is better. Those kind of things are staples. Bill Connelly of ESPN is not a guy who tends to go off of narratives. Bill is a guy who tends to go off of data. We've had Bill on the show before. We'll have him on again because he's got his own formulas that he's put together that give him a decent idea what's coming for college football. If Bill Connelly's numbers like your team or don't like your team, it doesn't guarantee something, but it tracks pretty well more often than not. And so Bill Connelly got some people worked up over the weekend when he said that there are 9 programs that have averaged a 12.5 SP plus rating since World War II. Just 9. And he dubbed those programs the Mega Blue Bloods. And the reason he brought this up is because he said that the 9 teams that fit this description just enjoyed their best ever collective season. So these are the Mega Blue Bloods. They've been the best of the best, according to his numbers, since World War II, and they just simultaneously all had the best year ever. And these are the ones that made the cut. Now, again, the important thing here is his standard was over 12.5 on his formula, SP+. A lot of people don't fully understand that formula. I'm not going to pretend to be able to give you a great explanation of it myself in the next 30 seconds. If you want to read it, you can go to ESPN.com. You can check out Bill Connelly's work and explain what it is there. But the 9 schools that made the cut, Alabama, Georgia, LSU, Michigan, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Penn State, and Texas. Now, again, this is since World War II. So there are a couple of programs on there that I think some people are like, whoa, no. Texas hasn't been that good. Texas has won some titles, but Texas has had lots of years where they've been disappointed. How are they better than, for example, a Florida with 3 national titles? How are they better than them? Are they better than Nebraska? You know, that kind of thing. There were some arguments here. For what it's worth, the next closest, LSU was actually the last one on the list. They barely made it at 12.5. The next closest team, if I gave you those 9, Oklahoma, Alabama, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Michigan, Penn State, Texas, Georgia, LSU. That was the order, with Oklahoma actually the team that has the highest SP plus since World War II out of all of them. And LSU, 12.5, the last one to get across the line. Where would you go for Team 11? Where would you think the next answer would be? I'll give you a second to think about it. I will tell you that the teams behind that team were the Trojans, Florida, FSU, and Miami, all 3 of the Florida schools, while none of them have had the same success consistently in recent years. FSU obviously just had a great year, but none of the 3 of them have had the consistent success in the last 12 to 13 years that they did in their heyday there, but they're all at least in the neighborhood. Nebraska and Auburn were the only other programs above 10, except for the team that was the next team knocking on the door, Tennessee. I don't know that a lot of people would have guessed that correctly. I don't think I would have. If you had told me, here's the 9, who's going to be number 10, I would have been a lot more likely to guess one of either the Florida teams, Maybe Nebraska. I don't know if I would have done the Trojans, because the Trojans have had some great years, but then they've also had some years where they were just horrible. How you manage to have people like Paul Hackett as the coach of your football program when you are a school like Southern Cal, I have no idea, but they did. Ted Tolner, Larry Smith, they've had some eras there that were really undistinguished eras. Obviously, Clay Helton did not carry up the full potential of that program to its farthest extent. So, yeah, you look at it, you say, okay, I could see how they didn't make it. I would not have guessed Tennessee. I would not have guessed, again, back to World War II. So I'm assuming that the General Nealon years are doing some heavy lifting there, because you obviously had a great era with Fulmer. You have not had a great era other than that in quite a while. And so I would not have guessed that they would be the next closest in the bunch. But out of the 9 Mega Blue Bloods, as defined by Bill Connolly, you go back through that list and you've got 5 of them playing in the SEC. But of the 5 that are playing in the SEC, 2 of them are just stepping in. So you've got Oklahoma, Alabama, you've got Texas, Georgia, and LSU. But obviously, again, 3 of the 5 are coming in. And what's interesting is, at least right now, I think the perception is that of those group that is coming in, that the one that is much better positioned, that people are more confident about what they're going to do, is the one that's farther behind. Oklahoma, who's had the most success of anybody since World War II, as defined by Bill Connolly's numbers here, I think there's a lot of people looking at Oklahoma and saying, we'll see. I'm not so sure about them, because Oklahoma doesn't have the same amount of talent to draw from in their state that Texas does. And because Oklahoma is a program that I think some people look at and they say, okay, you've been great dominating a lot of teams that aren't as good as you, but can you trade haymakers week in, week out in a way you never have had to? Texas right now is perceived as the program a little farther ahead in their development and to have better resources top to bottom. A reminder that Oklahoma historically has not had many fallow periods. There was that period right after Barry Switzer where you had, briefly, Gary Gibbs, briefly Howard Schnellenberger, a disastrous run for John Blake. So the 90s, they basically were a mess until Stoops at the very end. Other than that, not a lot of fallow periods for Oklahoma. Maybe a program we're all underestimating at least a little bit. We'll talk some Bama coming up here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
King of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Blue here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit jimellis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Chuck Oliver Show rolls on. Heath in for Chuck today. Thank you for hanging out with us for 2 hours every day talking some college football. And right now, hanging out with us On the Duncan Newsmaker line, our truest reporter on Alabama, it's A.J. Spurr. He's the site editor for Roll Tide Wire. That is a USA Today thing, and he joins us right now here on the Chuck Oliver Show. A.J., how are you, man?
I'm doing mighty fine. And, Heath, it's great to finally talk to you on air after always talking to you off air. Thank you so much for having me. How you doing?
I appreciate you making the time for us. And, yeah, look, Bama's had a week to kind of digest their spring. Earlier we were talking about a couple of the programs that wrapped it up this past weekend. Now that you've had a little time to take a look at things and to see kind of where things go for them going forward in the portal, including a noteworthy acquisition we'll mention in a minute here, what's your takeaway from what Bama got done in spring?
Well, look, I think that what we've seen from Kalen DeBoer and this team in the spring, as well as the spring scrimmage, A-Day, it really does seem like this team is more cohesive than a lot of people thought they were going to be at this point. And I think it's noteworthy, Heath, as well, to mention the spring portal now has been open for a week. We really haven't seen too many departures from this program, and I know a lot of fears were that, you know, after getting a taste of Kalen DeBoer, a lot of, you know, high-profile players on this roster may not be happy with where they're at on the depth chart, where they're practicing, or just the way that he's running the show. And instead, what we've seen are a handful of walk-on players, people down on the depth chart, decide to leave for the transfer portal. And Alabama, like you've mentioned, has had two massive additions via the transfer portal this spring. And overall, if you're an Alabama fan, you take this as a huge win heading into the latter portion of spring here and gearing up for the regular season.
Yeah, I think that there are some people. First of all, I think we're seeing that the transfer portal as a whole has been not quiet, but quieter. I think some people thought we were just going to see half of college football put their name in and see what happens. So far, look, there's more than a week to go, but it's been quieter than I think some people imagined maybe in their wildest dreams it would be. But then also, I think there were a lot of people who got really spooked by the idea that, okay, if even Alabama could have some really important players just decide, hey, Saban's gone, I'm out of here. I think that led people to assume, well, geez, if that could happen to them, if Washington could be reduced to just basically a smoking crater in the absence of Kalen DeBoer, if that could happen to teams that were playoff-level programs, it's going to happen to everybody. And it doesn't seem like, at least right now in the spring, it's playing out that way, maybe because teams don't have as many spots for guys to covet in the first place.
Absolutely, and I will be honest, there was a lot of talk from big-name pundits in the college football world who said this is going to be a game-changing spring transfer portal window. We're going to see massive names enter the portal. This is going to lead to changes in the NCAA and how they go about handling NIL in the portal. And I really do think that, I don't want to say it was overhyped, but expectations were certainly set at a new high. And we haven't seen that yet. And like you said, there's still time for players to enter the portal. But from what we've seen so far, whether it's NIL collectives ponying up and giving players what they want, or just the lack of available roster spots on big-name programs that could really utilize some of these guys that are thinking about entering the portal, we just haven't seen that yet. And from an Alabama perspective, it really does go to show that, A, Kalen DeBoer has done a good enough job to retain the talent on this roster, and B, you know, for Alabama, there's no open spots. There's nowhere on this roster, except for maybe the cornerback and just secondary in general, where they could use a little bit of help. But it's evidently not that big of a problem where there aren't players being pushed out of the program, where Alabama is now forced to recruit through the portal to improve at that position. So it's evident that Kalen DeBoer and this coaching staff is confident with what they have, and we have roughly a week to go until this portal window closes. So we'll see what happens. But as things stand, you know, it's looking good for Alabama.
Now, does Caden Proctor count as an addition? Like, what are we putting the category on of him? He basically went on Iowa for vacation and got to skip spring. I mean, that's basically the gist of it.
I'm counting him as an addition purely by technicality. But look, he went over there. A lot of people said he just wanted to see Caitlin Clark play. That's understandable. That's stuff of legends over there. But, you know, I think that he realized the grass maybe wasn't greener on the other side. There were also reports that he still has a lot of close connections with players that stayed on Alabama's roster. And maybe just through word of mouth, hearing what kind of show Kalen DeBoer was running in Tuscaloosa, he realized, you know what? Maybe I made a mistake. And I know that there's talks about NIL and what he was offered at Iowa, maybe what Alabama's offering him to come back. You know, the fact of the matter is he left and now he's back. There's a reason for it. And we may never know exactly what that reason is, but at the end of the day, we now know he would much rather be back at Alabama than he would elsewhere. And entering the portal with a no contact tag tells me everything I need to know, which was it's not a matter of Iowa was the problem. He just wanted to be back at Alabama.
AJ Spurrier with us from Roll Tide Wire. It's a USA Today thing, and talking about Alabama in the aftermath of their spring and looking ahead. So if that one is sort of an asterisk addition, the latest one that came down the last 24 hours is pretty noteworthy. Lou Groza Award-winning kicker Graham Nicholson put his name in last week from Miami of Ohio. And I don't know that people immediately connected the dots and said, okay, Bama. But it does make sense when you've had stable kicking. We know one of the single things that has occasionally derailed Bama in the last decade has been when they've not had stable kicking. If a guy like that's in the portal, it makes sense with where they are right now that this would be a need that they would try to fill.
Absolutely, and you hit the nail right on the head. It wasn't a name that jumped out at people. It wasn't a player that people immediately said, this is a player that's Alabama-bound out of the portal. But you mentioned it's a fact that Alabama, before Will Reichard, did not have stable kicking, and it cost them games. It, you know, almost cost them a national championship back in 2017 against Georgia. And, you know, Will Reichard wasn't perfect, although he was pretty darn close to it. So when Will Reichard, you know, leaves the program, a lot of people were upset, not just because we have this, you know, consistent kicker that basically locked down special teams for the Crimson Tide for, you know, over 4 years. But Will Reichard was a fan favorite as well. I mean, Alabama, I don't know if a lot of people know this, special teams for Crimson Tide fans is a huge deal. They love the punters, the kickers. So, you know, having somebody that's easy to root for and that they're confident in is very important, especially in a season where there's plenty of unknowns. You know, who knows what's going to happen with the offense? You know, we have an offensive head coach now. Who knows how the defense is going to look? There may be games, Heath, where it does come down to, you know, can Graham Nicholson make a kick? And if you're going to have somebody out there kicking, you might as well have the reigning Lou Groza Award winner. So I think Kalen DeBoer in Alabama really did do a good job of recruiting him, kind of laying low. It was an under-the-radar pickup. And I think it's going to be a huge factor in the 2024 season.
One of the things that was interesting coming out of the spring was that Ty Simpson, who's the kind of guy that, frankly, the portal seems made for. Okay, you're a talented player. You don't see a path to the starting job. Everybody needs quarterbacks at some level of the sport. So, you know, maybe jump in, get somebody a good offer for you to go to be at another Power 5 program or Power 4 program we're talking now. He seemed like an obvious fit for something like that and instead really emphatically put it out there. Yeah, no, not going to the portal, not looking around. Do we look at that if you're an Alabama fan and say, hey, that's great, we've got depth? Or do we look at that and say, this is a guy who looks at the DeBoer offense, looks at Milroe and says, you know what, I'm still not sure, even with the experience, this dude is the starter. I think I might be able to get this gig.
You know, I really do think you can look at it both ways. A lot of people have likened the situation with Ty Simpson to what Mac Jones did during his time in Tuscaloosa. He was the, you know, third, fourth stringer under Jalen Hurts, Tua Tagovailoa. He waited it out. He had his one season. And with a program like Alabama where, you know, you're the highlight of college football, you're one of the top teams year in and year out, you know, if you get one opportunity, there's going to be plenty of eyeballs on you, especially those that belong to NFL scouts and coaches. So this could be a waiting game for Ty Simpson, or it could also be an opportunity for him to stay and compete. We've heard Kalen DeBoer time and time again explain there's no guaranteed job on this team. So even though Jalen Milroe is the incumbent starter, what we're seeing from Ty Simpson here is either a, you know, I think I have a shot to bypass Jalen Milroe on the depth chart, or, you know, I think I'm the next man up. And if for the 2025 season, he's just going to wait it out, perfect his craft, learn the Kalen DeBoer system and the offense that he's putting out there. And come 2025, he'll go out there and light it up and hopefully work his way into an NFL draft spot. So what we're seeing there is another reason why Kalen DeBoer should be praised from Alabama faithful, because not only is he able to keep the returning starters from last year, the difference makers, but he's able to lock down what many would consider the future of the program. So Ty Simpson deciding outright not even to test the waters is a testament to DeBoer's recruiting, retaining of talented players on the roster, and maybe the plan he's got set up for the future. There's a good chance he sold him on what's to come for Alabama football.
Yeah, I'm really interested. I look at the Bama schedule, and you've got two games that certainly they're expected to win, both at home against Western Kentucky and USF, but at the same time, it's a USF team that if anybody will come in not super intimidated by Alabama, it is that team, because they did struggle with them last year in Tampa, and USF did at least get to a bowl. So yeah, a couple of games that are at least interesting. They're not expected to be a full 12-round fight, but they're not step into the ring, first punch, you knock them out either. And then a road game with Wisconsin. We've seen Bama play plenty of these kind of teams. We have not seen Bama play many of them on the road. That first three games before the bye week and then the Georgia game, that in so many ways is going to define what people think of DeBoer year one. That's a really interesting beginning to the schedule.
It absolutely is. And I think it's going to give us a taste of what the Kalen DeBoer era is going to look like. Obviously, there's some kinks you're going to have to work out. Western Kentucky, like you said, should be a I hate to say it, and Alabama fans will say this is rat poison. You know, that should be a tune-up game, a figure-it-out game, see, you know, what you have in a real game scenario. You know, try some things out that maybe you wouldn't do against a team like Georgia or even Wisconsin on the road. USF, that game last season was the definition of a figure-it-out game. You saw Jalen Milroe on the sideline. They tried out Tyler Buckner. They tried out Ty Simpson. They tried a whole bunch of things that really we didn't see for the rest of the season. And USF, like you said, they don't have much to lose. They're going to come in that game swinging. And, you know, they thought they had Alabama's number last season, and now they come into Tuscaloosa and will try their absolute hardest to knock down Alabama. And look, Nick Saban lost to Louisiana Monroe in his first season at Alabama. USF wants to be the 2024 version of the 2007 Louisiana Monroe team. So I wouldn't be shocked if they put up a strong fight, but that will be the game for Kalen DeBoer and his coaching staff to really settle in, know who they have on their roster and what they want to roll with, especially when they have to go into Camp Randall the very next week and play in an environment that they're really not all too used to. So it'll be interesting to see. And then, like you mentioned, they have the bye week. Georgia is going to be the biggest test, and I know a lot of people have already kind of chalked that up to Georgia and Kirby Smart getting the better of a, you know, first-year SEC head coach. So we'll have to see what's going on there. But as things stand, those first three games offer a variety of different looks that we should have a good idea about the identity of this Alabama team early on.
Yeah, it's not a classic Wisconsin team right now. We'll see what they are in year two. I'm sure Fickell's getting him a little closer to what he'd like them to be. That was a pretty big transition, especially offensively, that they're trying to make. But it's just an interesting blend. It's a very different blend than anything that you can really point to that Saban had in the last few years for what that schedule starts like. And then having a game like that Georgia game that doesn't show up on the schedule that often to begin with, having it show up so early is particularly intriguing. AJ, always appreciate the time, man. You can check AJ out. Again, Roll Tide Wire is the spot. Spur, that's with 2 R's, Spur FM, the handle on Twitter. Thanks for being with us, AJ.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
There you go. There's a look at Alabama with AJ Spur here on the Chuck Oliver Show. Hey, look at the time. We've only got one more segment together. We'll try to make it a good one. Keep it right here.
It's always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
I went there saying that I was going to beat him out, and I feel as if I did. It didn't happen, so I had to pivot. I had to change. I had to keep going and adjust to what the position I was in, be the same person every day. But when I got my shot, nothing else was going to happen other than me being the guy.
That is the voice of Caleb Williams, and it's part of a longer conversation he had on the Pivot podcast that got my attention. You know, it's been real interesting because you have two guys in this draft, one of whom, and Williams, is by all accounts the first pick overall. to the Bears, and then another in Spencer Rattler, who was his teammate, and that's who he's talking about, and who he talks even more extensively about how basically from the minute he got on campus, he felt he was the better quarterback, and they'd beaten him out in the spring, and that he couldn't understand why he wasn't just already made the starting quarterback, and that Lincoln Riley told him to just keep working. And that obviously, as the year went on, he eventually got the job and did not wind up giving it back. Rattler transfers on to South Carolina, and Rattler, I think, is going to go in the third round, possibly late second. If what we're hearing is true, and as many as six guys go first round or five, and then somebody goes, probably Bo Nix goes close to the first round in the early second round. If it winds up playing out like that, I don't think that Spencer Rattler will last past the third round. In fact, I suspect he might not even get there because teams are just so hard up for quarterbacks. So it's just interesting because Williams is so hyper-confident about himself and almost dismissive of another guy who had a pretty nice career and is going to be drafted. And the thing I thought was interesting was listening to him talk about that and thinking about it in modern terms. Again, he just got there. He's there for the spring. He doesn't get the job. He thinks he's better than Rattler right away. He thinks, I should be the starting quarterback. I walked in. I'm the best quarterback in the universe. I should be the starting quarterback. This guy isn't giving me the job. Well, Riley told him, keep working. I'm going to bet that there's some things Riley saw that he needed to work on, even though he has this hyper level of belief in himself, that you still have some stuff that you're not ready. And my question is, if we had the current climate that we do, where a Caleb Williams could have said, okay, either I get the starting job or I'm out of here, buddy, would he have stayed? Would he have been around for that year at Oklahoma to then win the job and then follow his coach on, as it turns out, to USC, win a Heisman, and then set himself up for number one pick? Maybe. Instead, because he is so particularly confident in himself and is feeling some sense of aggrievement that, hey, I should already be the guy. I've won this job. He's not giving it to me. I'm better. Maybe he goes somewhere else. Maybe he doesn't do the work that he needed to do to get better. Maybe he goes somewhere else that says, sure, man, you're the starter right away. Step right in. You're that good. And maybe he never becomes the version of himself that wins the Heisman, that is going to be the number one pick, and that probably is going to have a really nice NFL career. Maybe he doesn't become that guy if he has that ability to leave with no consequences. Because at that time, if you transferred, you could transfer, but that would mean you're sitting out your first year. It would not have meant you could just go right away and play and with no consequence either, because, hey, if you go somewhere and you don't like it, just transfer wherever you want after that too. Play four schools in 4 years if you want. It wouldn't have been that way. And I hope that there are kids that are as confident and as talented as Caleb Williams that over the next year or two don't make what sounds to me like the kind of mistake he could have easily made had the current environment been in place. I hope they don't, because the chances that you are so good right away that you don't need to work on anything and you don't need to just let it breathe a little bit and give yourself some time to figure out what college is about before you start moving around, that's not great, but we're still seeing some kids that do it. Hey, that is what matters to me, and that's brought to you by thisstuffmatters.net. Make sure you check them out. A couple of last things for you here. One thing, talking about the NFL draft, man, we are not hearing a word about C2 tests, are we? Have we heard anything about the C2 test on Caleb Williams? Heard anything about the Wonderlic on anybody? Remember last year, right about this time, everybody was, oh, C2 test. You know, C.J. Stroud, I heard he did bad on that C2 test. And you know, you're in the 30 percentile on that test. I don't know, man. Most people had no idea what a C2 test even was, but everybody was busy repeating that like it was really important information about what kind of a person, what kind of a player C.J. Stroud was. And, of course, Stroud, of the young quarterbacks, went out and had by far the best year. Anthony Richardson had some good moments but got hurt really early, and in four games got hurt three times, which kind of tracked with what his situation was at Florida, where he's a talented guy but also got banged up a lot. And obviously Bryce Young played almost the entire season but really struggled. Now, how much of that was being on a terrible team that did not have a healthy offensive line to try and protect him at all? You know, you can debate for yourself whether or not that was the core issue or whether or not
Bryce Young just wasn't ready for the NFL because it's really hard. And just because you played well at a place like Bama where you had great resources doesn't mean that you're ready for the challenge of stepping in against elite talent when you don't have great resources the way that he didn't last year. Stroud immediately took a horrible team and got him in the playoffs. So I'm just glad we've gotten out of that era of having constant insinuations about guys off of tests that may or may not have anything to do with whether or not they're any good. Also want to quickly note the passing of Howie Schwab. Schwab, if you remember him from ESPN, you probably remember the show Stump the Schwab. Schwab was 63. He was a backbone part of that ESPN family. I won't pretend to have known him anywhere near as well as tons of other people, but he was a really good guy and incredibly smart about sports. I don't know if Chuck will tell the story or not. Chuck actually went on Stump the Schwab against the Schwab back in 2005. For real, that is not a joke. That is an actual story, but it's Chuck's story to tell if he wants to. I just tell you, Howie Schwab was a really good dude. It's a shame that he didn't finish his career at ESPN. We wanted to make sure we note his passing at 63. Have a great day. We will see you tomorrow with Chuck back in the chair.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Blue here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Tonight in Arkansas, there's a mother tucking in her daughter and turning off the light. A business owner is burning the midnight oil. An at-home dinner date is plating up possibility. And it's all happening under one roof. How? The power of a conversation, like the one John from Integrity Solutions had with First Horizon Bank about his vision for a sustainable mixed-use building. Now it's not just words, it's life. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/John. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.